Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 12th day of June, 2021. I know it's been a while. I am your host, Mark Call, and we'll get to the intervening month or so in just a minute. Suffice it to say, to start things off, that I'm very happy and certainly thankful to be here. I guess I had better start with at least a brief explanation of that, because yours truly has been in the hospital for weeks out of the last month. Just got home not quite a week ago, and quite frankly, I'm still in the process of recovering. Still on oxygen, which does make it admittedly quite a bit more difficult to do these shows, especially live, so I am pre-recording this one, so I can take a break every now and then and do some editing, not to mention take a few deep breaths. About the time that I finished what turned out to be the last show that I did for the network for quite a while, I kind of felt disoriented and lost track of time. And the next thing I know, I woke up in a hospital about 4 hours away by ground, less when it comes to flight for life, in Colorado Springs, where, although the nursing staff was particularly wonderful, I spent several of the longest weeks of my life. And except by phone, I was pretty well cut off from everybody. Somewhere along the way, my cell phone managed to get lost, and it ended up being that I didn't even have so much as a tablet for most of the time that I was in there. So I guess that explains, for those of you that sent emails, why I haven't gotten back to you yet. Just a few days ago now, was I finally able to come home, and that was a wonderful blessing, just after the Memorial Day weekend. So I'll say it again, and I need to add one more thing as well. I am very thankful and extremely blessed to be here. I certainly appreciate the support and the prayers from all of those who listen to Hebrew Nation Radio and the other related networks that my shows have been broadcast on. All of those who participate in our Shabbat Shalom Mesa Fellowship and online worship services. And a host of wonderful family, friends, and neighbors who have not only been prayerfully supportive, but have pitched in here to help my wife Linda run the ranch when we needed it most. And frankly, still do, because it's going to be a while before yours truly is able to get up and throw a 70-pound bale of hay around again. There's no doubt in my mind that all of that made and continues to make an incredible difference. And most of all, of course, I'm thankful to Yahuwah, our Creator and Redeemer. Some of you I know might not have heard that name yet, but God Almighty at least comes close. And I know that I felt His hand, His protection, and His healing, and I wouldn't be here now otherwise. And I certainly know as well that there are things that He has for me to do, and I'm looking forward to that. On a different aspect of a similar subject, I've suggested that while I can't prove this, I have a pretty strong inkling of what happened. And I've talked about it on various news shows, and certainly reviewed evidence from a number of doctors on this score as well. I have a pretty strong suspicion that it wasn't just plain old COVID, in other words, that was the problem here. But we've got an increasing number of people, particularly in at least one area to which we've been exposed, in the vicinity, that have now taken the poke and are probably exactly as Dr. Geert van den Bossche had suggested quite some time ago, shedding variants of the COVID-1984 as well as the spike protein itself, which lies at the heart of the not vaccines. And in hindsight, I've known and talked about hydroxychloroquine along with Z-Pak and most importantly zinc as one of the several proven cures, if used early enough, for COVID-19. That applies to alternatives like ivermectin as well, all of which have been suppressed by evil sons of you-know-what like Anthony Fauci and crew. Because, as regular listeners know, you can't have emergency use authorization for an untested, not vaccine, to be used on tens or hundreds of millions of people without bothering to go through required animal tests and other certification requirements if there are any real inexpensive, as it turns out, and proven alternatives available, so we'll just suppress them. And I have to admit, the bottom line is, I got caught off guard. I knew that it was important to have some of these things on hand, but I hadn't, simply because I didn't know how to get a hold of them, at least until it was too late for things that should have been used early on. I certainly encourage listeners to take a lesson from what I'm suggesting here and get a hold of these things, have them on hand in case you do come down with something that you want to use them for. One of the places you can go for information is America's Frontline Doctors. And yes, it is possible to acquire the regimen for hydroxychloroquine and also ivermectin and have them available up front, even for prophylactic use. No, I'm not going to give out so-called medical advice, but I will suggest that it's very important to understand what's going on, know your options, and have options available if you need them. Because by the time you realize it's too late, well, it's too late. Meanwhile, what's most important, besides knowing who you serve and who the real healer is and has always been, and I have been doing this and am now back on that regimen, is to make sure that you're taking the supplements that will keep your immune system healthy. And of course, that you eat healthy, real foods and avoid the poisons, aspartame, fluoride, heavy metals, and of course, GMOs and the like. But in the process, certainly don't neglect various vitamin supplements, things we're not getting from the food as a general rule. Things like vitamin C, vitamin D, which is usually taken as D3 along with K2, as well as other mineral supplements like zinc and so forth. All this information is also available online, and like so many things, what's important is understanding, education, and making your own decisions, because forewarned is forearmed. In my own case, once I woke up in the hospital, what I found I was dealing with was a very severe case of pneumonia. Later, there were some complications as a result of some of the allopathic drugs that I was given to combat the possibility, if you've heard it all by now, blood clots, and the result instead was internal bleeding, which sent me back about a week. Eventually, though, I was able to get out, and why all of a sudden does it feel like I'm talking about a stint in the county jail? And once I got home, I think I've been improving fairly rapidly, although, yeah, I've still got quite a ways to go. And it's going to be a while, they tell me, until I'll be able to get rid of the oxygen. What I want to do on today's show will no doubt be a bit different, although I doubt that'll come as a surprise. I want to review some of the things that really came to the fore while I was basically out of commission. In a lot of cases, they were things we've been talking about here for a long, long time, certainly much longer than the waste stream has ever taken notice of them. Left to their own devices, I have no doubt they'd still be ignoring the real truth. And the underlying theme is one that I've talked about before, but, and you'll see why, it's never been more important. Because what Hitler referred to as the big lie has never been bigger or more pervasive. One of the most criminally evil men in the history of the planet, Anthony Fauci, America's own Dr. Mengele, as I refer to him, has been and is being revealed. Big Brother will probably set him up as a scapegoat. He certainly deserves it, but he's only the tip of the iceberg, at the very most. And what's been done and is still being done under the guise of COVID-1984 and the part two of the bioweapon, the Zyklon B injection that claims to be a vax but isn't, is no doubt one of the biggest and most deadly lies in the history of planet Earth. But even that is still only a small part of the bigger picture. What I want to try to make clear today, folks, is just how big the big lie truly is, and as a result, in whom you put your trust has never been more important to understand. I want to start off today with a news story that may certainly not be as important as an outright act of war by one of the world's major powers, unleashing a bioweapon against the world's population, and certainly not the attempted genocide of tens, perhaps hundreds of millions of people by means of a Zyklon B injection masquerading as a vaccine. Hey, have you been duped or coerced yet into taking the poison poke? And no, I'm not even talking about the theft of an election and the communist takeover of a formerly free republic. Instead, this is just another great big whopping waste stream media outright in your face lie that's finally been revealed. But isn't it true that that's basically what all those other stories really have in common? Besides the obvious fact that there's a satanic motive that seems to connect them all as well? This story is one that you may have overlooked. I certainly almost did, but it comes from Glenn Greenwald, and that's why I took a deeper look at it, who's become one of the major voices for honest, actual, real journalism still out there. And it's entitled, Yet Another Media Tale, Trump Tear-Gassed Protesters for a Church Photo Op. Oh, and guess what? It has collapsed. This is how he begins. For more than a year, it's been consecrated media fact, and you know what that means now, and if you don't, we're getting to it, that former President Donald Trump and his White House on June 1st, just over 1 year ago, and that tells you something as well, directed the U.S. Park Police to use tear gas against, say it with me folks, peaceful protesters in Lafayette Park, all to enable a Trump photo op in front of St. John's Church. Now, let me insert this here. We know that the media has lied about what they call peaceful protests, which almost universally haven't been. They do, however, just happen to include not only Antifa and BLM, but a whole lot of rioting, looting, firebombs, and the occasional beating somebody over the head with a bike lock and a sock. In this case, though, the story isn't the so-called peaceful protest. It's what the evil guy in the White House did to the nice people out there protesting to turn it into a photo op. That this happened, the author continues, was never presented as a possibility or even a likelihood, but as undisputable media-acknowledged fact, truth, and you must accept it. And, says Greenwald, it provided weeks of unmitigated media outrage, presented as one of the most egregious assaults on the democratic order in decades, unless you count, of course, the later things that the United States' last elected president was also guilty of, with or without evidence. So how hard did they beat the media war drums? The tale was so pervasive in the media landscape, writes Glenn Greenwald, that it would be impossible in any one article to even compile all of the examples. Says the June 1 NPR headline, "Peaceful protesters tear gassed to clear way for Trump church photo op." The New York Times ran with this, "Protesters dispersed with tear gas so Trump could pose at church." CNN devoted multiple segments to venting their righteous indignation, while the on-screen graphic declared, "Peaceful protesters near White House tear gassed, shot with rubber bullets so Trump can have photo op." ABC News anchor, with apologies to the late Rush Limbaugh, Steffi Stephanopoulos, reported in his serious tones that, quote, "The administration asked police to clear peaceful protesters from the park across from the White House so the president could stage a photo op." The Intercept itself published an article stating that federal police used tear gas and rubber bullets to clear protesters from Lafayette Square in front of the White House, all to feature a video where the first interviewer said, quote, "To me, the way our military and police have behaved towards the protesters at the instruction of President Trump has been almost Nazi-like." Yeah, Nazi-like, emphasizes Greenwald. This was repeated by virtually every major corporate media news outlet. And he even gives other examples. Oh, including this one, which I will at least mention. The not eligible for the White House, now allegedly Vice President, Kamala Harris, then the Soros pick from California, proclaimed with anger, quote, "Last night I watched as President Trump, having gassed peaceful protesters just so he could do this photo op, then went on to tear gas priests who were helping protesters in Lafayette Park." And we certainly don't want to forget speaker for the traitors, nasty Nancy Pelosi, who appeared on MSNBC's Morning Joe and opined, "What is this, a banana republic? Well, if it's not yet, you're getting it there, lady." When she was asked about NBC News report that security forces used tear gas and flashbangs against a group of, yeah, peaceful protesters to clear the area for the president. Continues Glenn Greenwald, there were a few denials of the official narrative at this time, but they were largely confined to right-wing media, along with those few on Fox News who dared to report the position of the White House. And ABC News mocked them. As usual, though, he says, self-proclaimed superior liberal truth squad members instantly declared anyone who said anything other than what they were pushing to be liars. Oh, and no doubt conspiracy theorists as well. The WAPO fact checker, Philip Bump, mocked denials from Trump supporters and right-wing reporters, such as the Federalist Molly Hemingway, proclaiming that a recent statement from the Park Police, quote, "brings the debate to a close and proves," quote, "the deployment of security forces using weapons and irritants to clear a peaceful protest was so that the president could have a photo op." I think we get the picture. Peaceful protesters, weapons that are only bad when they're not deployed against libertarians, constitutionalists, or conservatives, and an elected president who we would never have put in there anyway if we'd had the tools that are now at our disposal. The story isn't what happened, but why, and the why is so the evil president could have a photo op. Turns out, though, the real why is because it was a great big whopping lie. Writes Glenn Greenwald, on Wednesday this week, all of it came crashing down on their heads because the independent Inspector General of the Interior Department, Mark Lee Greenblatt, issued his office official findings after a long investigation into, quote, the actions of the U.S. Park Police, or USPP, to disperse protesters in and around Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C. on 1 June 2020. Greenblatt, he notes, has been around Washington for a long time, occupying numerous key positions, even in the Obama regime, including investigative counsel at the Department of Justice's Office of the OIG and Assistant Inspector General for Investigations at Obama's Commerce Department. So, were it not for what he's uncovered here, he would be beyond reproach. The letter released by Greenblatt's office accompanying the report makes it clear just how far-reaching, says Greenwald, the investigation really was. Quote, over the course of this review, our career investigative staff conducted extensive witness interviews, reviewed video footage from numerous vantage points, listened to radio transmissions from multiple law enforcement entities, and examined evidence including emails, text messages, telephone records, procurement documents, and other related materials. So the report presents a thorough independent examination, he said, of that evidence to assess the USPP's decision-making and operations, including a detailed timeline of relevant actions and an analysis of whether their actions complied with governing policies. And the result, writes Greenwald, could not be clearer. The media narrative was false from start to finish. Namely, said Greenblatt, the evidence did not support a finding that the U.S. Park Police cleared the park on June 1 so that then President Trump could enter the park. Instead, exactly as Molly Hemingway's article that was so widely mocked by the liberal outlets had already reported, quote, the evidence we reviewed showed that the USPP cleared the park to allow a contractor to safely install anti-scale fencing. What? You mean the same kind of fencing that the leftists put up around the Capitol? Well, probably not quite as nasty. In response to destruction of federal property and injury to officers that occurred on 30 and 31 May, 2 days prior to the event. Crucially, quote, the evidence established that relevant USPP officials had made those decisions and had begun implementing the operational plan hours before they knew of any potential presidential visit to the park, which occurred later that day. The IG report, he goes on to say, detailed the timeline even more extensively. Suffice it to say, the plan was already in place and already being implemented many hours before Trump even made a decision to head in that direction. Bottom line, the clearing of the park, said the IG report, had nothing, let me repeat that again, nothing whatsoever to do with Trump or his intended visit to the church. In fact, those responsible for doing all of this didn't even know of Trump's intentions. And the planning for the operation had begun, furthermore, at least 2 full days before any Trump decision to visit the church. The fencing contractor, for example, had already been contacted well in advance about doing the job. Indeed, concludes Greenwald, none of the key decision makers had any idea that the president was coming when they implemented plans to clear the park. Quote, the USPP operations manager, the USPP incident commander, and the USPP acting chief of police told us, said the inspector general report, they didn't even know the president planned to make a speech in the Rose Garden that evening. Furthermore, said the report, of the dozens of people who participated in the investigation, no one that they interviewed stated that the U.S. Park Police cleared the park because of a potential presidential visit or that they even altered the timeline in any way to accommodate the movement of the president. How much of that did you hear from the waste stream, folks? In sum, writes Glenn Greenwald, honest journalist, the media claims that were repeated over and over and over again as, say it with me, proven fact, and even confirmed by the fact checkers, were completely, undeniably false. Watch how easily, he says, including the video, and often, and aggressively, and readily, they spread the lies. And he includes a link to one courtesy of CNN's Aaron Burnett and the infamous lying Don Lemon. So let me see if I can summarize what we've got so far. They lie. They lie again. They're proud of the lie. They discuss the lie among themselves and pat themselves on the back for how clever they are. And then they repeat the lie again and ignore and even demean any attempts to ferret out the actual truth. The truth, by the way, was out there. Molly Hemingway for the Federalist, and she wasn't alone, got it right a year ago. And the waste stream has been caught again, concludes Glenn Greenwald. With the issuance of the independent debunking of their claims, the journalists, sick, who spread this latest lie, have started to come to terms with what they did yet again. Quote, a narrative we thought we knew is not the reality, said NBC News' chief CIA disinformation agent Ken Delanian on Meet the Press Daily. Shortly before publication of this article, says Greenwald, Politico knowingly admitted that, quote, while the department's park police failed to give BLM demonstrators proper warning before they cleared them from Lafayette Park, the primary media narrative was untrue. How's that for spinning it? Time will tell, says Greenwald, just how readily others who spread this lie will account for how they, yet again, got this story oh so wrong. Over and over again, we see the central truth. The corporate outlets that most loudly and shrilly denounce what they laughably lie and call disinformation, to the point of demanding online censorship and deplatforming in the name of combating it, are in fact the ones who spread the real disinformation most frequently and destructively. Folks, your host has been talking about the great big whopping lies surrounding so-called assault weapons, actual statistics surrounding the use of firearms for things like self-defense, the real law, and the intended destruction of the Second Amendment, for just one example, for decades now. When they have an agenda, they're more than willing to lie. Anyway, well, says Greenwald, it's hard to count just how many times they have spread major fake stories concerning the last elected president in the Trump years. For that reason, they have nobody to blame but themselves for the utter collapse in trust and faith on the part of the public, which has rightfully concluded, at long last, your host adds, that they cannot and should not be believed. And there's the real point, folks. We've known for years how to tell that a politician is lying. Their lips are moving. Once it was a joke. Now it's so trite, it's been true but not funny for years. And in the case of a waste stream media journalist with their CIA, FBI, and TLA connections galore, if their pen is moving, their fingers are moving over a keyboard, or their lips are moving, we now know they're lying through their teeth. That's why your host is careful to mention, usually for other reasons besides, when it's a WAPO, CNN, New York Times, or NPR byline on a story. You start off with the almost unassailable suspicion that it's a lie. And if there seems to be an element of truth, well then look and apply the 80-20 rule, because the deception is certainly in there. And the real story is probably the smokescreen and the cover-up associated with it. And I'll say it again, virtually everything the mainstream is focused on today is a lie. They're lying about the Constitution. They lied about the former president. They certainly lied about the stolen election, and they're lying about the cover-up thereof. They're lying about the supply chain breakdown, the coming food issues, the economic meltdown, and the hyperinflation to follow as well. They lied about Fauci. They lied about the COVID-1984 engineered Fauci/CCP bioweapon. They're lying about the Zyklon B mRNA-based so-called vaccine, which isn't a real vaccine at all. They're lying about the deaths that have already happened, and you know blankety-blankin' well they intend to lie about the massive, even millions upon millions of deaths that will soon follow. There's a moral here, folks, and sadly it's almost too late for most Americans to take it to heart. The die has been cast. I've made this point many times before, but it's perhaps never been more important. There's an old saying that truth is the first casualty of war. Have we realized yet that we're in a war and there's been no truth from the waste stream for a long, long time? Pay attention. Make sure you understand where the truth is and where it's not, and what we need to do about it as we face a future that's going to be full of more lies than most Americans have yet begun to realize is even possible. Just like Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. Yes, this is again your regular host, Mark Call. And I'm talking tonight not just about the big lie, we've done that before, but the latest, and it's still being revealed. The big, really, really, really big lie, and it's more inclusive and more pervasive, even for those who've come to terms with the fact that not only are they lying to you, yeah, a whole lot of them intend to kill you, but most people can still get their heads around. I've told the story many, many times, and I won't tell it again today, about the scene from Schindler's List, where the old woman who doesn't know it yet, but she's fixing to go to Auschwitz, still can't truly comprehend the level of evil that she's dealing with in the Nazi regime. And she looks right at the camera and says, "That is so horrible. I cannot believe they would do anything so horrible." And the problem we face, folks, is convincing not only other people, but ourselves, that they really are that evil, and they really would and intend to do more than that, but a whole lot of things that are so horrible. So let's start off this segment with a quote from one of those truly evil to their satanic core people. And yeah, that's an assumption on my part, but I've certainly seen a whole lot of really nasty, evil, wicked fruit, not to mention undeniable perjury, attempted mass murder, and outright treason. And I'm talking again about America's Dr. Mengele, Anthony Fauci. Here's Washington's favorite satanic saint appearing with Chuck Todd on MSNBC for a really disgusting softball interview earlier this week, which concludes with this. And listen to the hubris of this you-know-what. "If you're attacking me," he concludes, "no, you're not just attacking God's representative in the government of the United States. You're attacking the sainted God of science, with a capital S, itself. Give me a break." But still, listen anyway.
"As you know, many state public health officials have quit their jobs over the last year because of the unrelenting attacks that have taken place. And now you're at the focal point. What is your level of concern that we're going to discredit public health officials?"
Too late. They shot themselves in the foot, reloaded, and then did it again. Anybody that still trusts them is, let's just be frank here, an idiot.
"Discredit public health officials to the point of, you know, look at Russia. They actually have a good vaccine, and none of their citizens will take it because they don't trust their own government."
Whoa, quick time out here. Is this the same blithering idiot that then turns around and says, "Russia, Russia, Russia, nobody trusts Russia. Putin is evil. How dare anybody think that Russia, Russia, Russia was..." I mean, look at this, folks. Can you believe what you're hearing from these people? Do not trust them, period. Back to the question.
"They actually have a good vaccine, and none of their citizens will take it because they don't trust their own government."
Right. It's very dangerous, Chuck, because a lot of what you're seeing as attacks on me, quite frankly, are attacks on science. Because all of the things that I have spoken about consistently from the very beginning have been fundamentally based on science.
And no, folks, that obviously has nothing to do with the kind of science that involves evidence, experiment, and data. And when it turns out that something is wrong, we'll then go back and revise the hypothesis. No, this is Fauci, who is science. Keep listening.
"Sometimes those things were inconvenient truths for people, and there was pushback against me. So if you are trying to, you know, get at me as a public health official and a scientist, you're really attacking not only Dr. Anthony Fauci, you're attacking science. And anybody that looks at what's going on clearly sees that. You have to be asleep not to see that. That is what's going on. Science and the truth are being attacked."
The truth, at least in the swamp, folks, is dead and buried. And honestly, what more proof do you need? At this point, yeah, I'll take a couple of deep breaths and admit it. This guy is absolutely infuriating. I actually don't think I've seen in my entire life a man who literally epitomizes evil, sitting right there and lying to people and killing people en masse for so long and then getting away with it. This is so bad that if they don't make the guy a scapegoat, that also speaks volumes. But back to other elements of the big lie, the COVID-1984 pandemic, and of course, phase two of the bioweapon, the vaccine that isn't. First, though, Let's put one more quick puzzle piece in place here, just in case you've missed it. More and more news stories are coming out and admitting that not only was the CCP virus the product of the communist Chinese bioweapons lab, although they still don't come quite all the way out and say that, but there are certainly indications of a massive cover-up, and the Fauci emails make that pretty clear. Here's Kentucky Senator Rand Paul in a recent interview outlining some of the elements of that, and the fact that, even though he soft-pedals it a bit, a criminally evil mastermind like Tony Fauci shouldn't be anywhere near a so-called investigation of his crimes.
One of the email changes between this Peter DeZock of EcoHealth, Ralph Barrick, and they're saying, we need to get people to sign a letter saying we shouldn't, you know, that there was no lab leak. We need to get all this organized, but maybe we shouldn't sign it so it looks as if this were an independent effort. That to me sounds like a cover-up. But I think really if you want an honest investigation, Dr. Fauci should be excluded because of conflict of interest. I think because he's been unwise, naive, and in all likelihood has been lying to us, he shouldn't be in part of government. But he certainly shouldn't be part of the investigation. If you want to have an open and thorough investigation, it can include Peter DeZock or Dr. Fauci.
And if you want to have any trust in government whatsoever, it can include the likes of this snake. And if the media wants to preserve any semblance of trust whatsoever, they better expose this you-know-what for what he is, and fast. Now, folks, one element of the massive plandemic and attempted genocidal bioweapon deployment certainly includes the vaccine that everyone who's been paying attention knows is not a vaccine at all. It's an mRNA-based attempt to modify the DNA of most people and perhaps even develop variants of the bioweapon in a mass human petri dish at the very same time. Where I want to go next is an interesting timeline and a related piece put together by Julie Beal. It's up on the web in a number of places, entitled Paving the Way for What She Calls the Rona Scam. It begins like this. The work that had been done over the years on formulations, RNA modifications, and other techniques was paying off just in time for the current pandemic. Oops, didn't spell that right. mRNA vaccination was in exactly the right stage for things to take off with a good expectation of success. That's kind of a revealing quote, isn't it? It helps to know, she then says, how we got here. And the following timeline traces the creation of the DARPA Big Pharma package of solutions for SARS-CoV-2 and illustrates just how ready we all were, or were at least put in place to be. Every outbreak furthered the development of genetic vaccines. Cases were counted according to tests, then compared to deaths associated with, but not necessarily caused by, the virus in question. Every outbreak featured a virus with a cleavage site. Now, that's a term that if you don't listen to CNN, you've probably heard. You'll hear a bit more about here. And they can all be stabilized with the NIH's pre-fusion design, just like the Rona. The Rona scam solutions, though, were vastly enabled by, number one, Barrick, Xi, and Daszak making bat coronaviruses able to infect humans and suggesting targets for vaccines. Number two, Graham at the VRC developing vaccines. And number three, McIllan Ward and others from Dartmouth College and Scripps perfecting the pre-fusion technique. And four, working closely with Moderna and CureVac to turn it all into mRNA. Plus, of course, a huge amount of money. All they needed was a plandemic, and nothing could have been better than SARS-CoV-2. It's a virus with an unexplained furin cleavage site that appears to have been made in a lab. And the more you see about the actual construction, and I use that term explicitly, folks, of the virus, the more it'll be obvious that it didn't happen by itself. It was, in fact, engineered and put together. And every intelligent and honest biochemist and vaccine scientist who's looked at it has made that pretty clear. It spreads far and wide, but without causing chaos. SARS-CoV-2 gets genetic vaccines in by the back door, and it kickstarts the Great Reset. Presumably, we're all just lab rats until this phase is over, because Gates and Schwab have promised us much worse is to come, apparently including a cyber attack, by which point things will be so chaotic that clinical trials will no longer be possible, much less needed. They've already gotten away without worrying about animal tests. And vaccine passports, you knew it was coming because Revelation told us so, will be mandatory. So let's go to the timeline, look at some of the things that she points out that really make all of this crystal clear, at least in hindsight, with a big picture view. The timeline starts with the founding of CureVac, associated with the mRNA part of the plot, back in the year 2000. That's followed up in 2001 by a number of methods for producing various recombinant coronavirus, patents filed by Barrick et al. At the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Oh, that seems to have been the place where the raw material for the coronavirus from bats et al. Came and then was delivered eventually to the BSL-4 lab in Wuhan. The coronavirus particles, quote, can be readily targeted to other mucosal surface mammalian species such as swine, and that's important because swine is really, really easy to develop nice bioweapons that will jump the species barrier to humans from by simple replacements, it continues, in the S glycoprotein gene, which has been shown to determine tissue and species tropism, i.e. the particles can be made to infect certain body tissues like lungs and even different species of animals by ARDA. By altering the spike protein or mutating amino acid residues, the patent acknowledges the danger inherent in this kind of biological material by noting, quote, the possibility of RNA recombination between the replicon RNA and wild-type virus cannot be eliminated and remains an important issue requiring additional analysis. Operation Dark Winter also started in 2001, having to do with simulation of anthrax and smallpox attacks, which at least help pave the way for where we are today. And those are followed, of course, by real anthrax attacks. In 2002, the SARS outbreak began in China. And SARS, if you don't recall, stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome and is said to be a new and atypical form of pneumonia. It allegedly jumped from bats to civet cats and then, of course, to the eventual goal, humans. In 2003, WHO announced the end of the SARS outbreak with 8,000 plus cases and 744 deaths. Basic work with researchers from the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick made clones of SARS called the Urbani strain. They were also infectious and they, quote, provided a template for manipulation of that viral genome, allowing for the rapid and rational development and testing of candidate vaccines and therapeutics. Yeah, it's always about making a vaccine and a therapeutic, isn't it? Never mind the fact that if you got a great vaccine, you really need something to test it with or at least deploy it on now, don't you? Especially if your goal isn't really to protect people, and that turns out to be all part of the great big lie. Since 2003, the timeline notes, there have been 6 documented cases of SARS disease outbreaks originating from where else? Research labs, including no less than 4 in China, resulting in 13 individual infections and 1 death. In 2004, there was a second lab accident that fueled some fears about SARS, and researchers began collecting the infamous bat coronaviruses to try and find some that were like SARS and prove they came from bats. 2005, she, and a name that we're going to hear more and more of, if things at least keep getting exposed, Daszak, published Bats Are Natural Reservoirs of SARS-like Coronaviruses. Operation Atlantic Storm provided another simulation of a smallpox attack, and Carrico et al. Published what was called a landmark paper suggesting that mRNA can still be made to work if artificial or modified versions are used. Carrico then got funding from the NIH, and the University of Pennsylvania filed patents, eventually assigned to, well, guess who? NIH. In 2006, the infamous WHO rewrote its international health regulations, binding on all member states, i.e. most of the world, and a public health emergency of international concern was defined as an extraordinary event which constitutes a public health risk to other capital S states through international spread of disease and potentially requires, say it with me folks, a coordinated and international response. Subsequently, a total of these 6 so-called PHEICs have been declared, H1N1 in 2009, polio in 2014, Ebola twice, 2014 and 2019, Zika in 2016, and SARS-CoV-2 in guess when, 2020. Well, after the Chinese lab and their NIH partners were done with the initial development work. Are you feeling properly softened up and prepared yet? The NIH and EU in that same year, 2006, formed what was called the AIDS COVAC Consortium to create, get this, a novel coronavirus-based HIV vaccine vector optimized for host entry. take a look in the mirror and see what they're talking about there. And in that same year, the NIH began a trial of DNA vaccines for H5N1, aka bird flu. In the year 2009, there was an early success that helped bring us to where we are today. Barrick et al. Were able to make some chimeric synthetic SARS coronaviruses with a bat origin that were able to infect human cells. Oh, joy of joys. Japanese researchers that same year created a SARS spike protein with a furin cleavage site, very much like the one that strangely appeared in the latest variant, SARS-CoV-2, and BioNTech was founded, which teamed with Pfizer in the year 2020. In 2009, WHO changed the definition of a flu pandemic so that deaths and illnesses, nobody cares about those anyway, were no longer relevant. Then they declared a swine flu pandemic, which lasts until 2010, but was later found to be, a fake. And the U.S. Agency for International Development initiated a new global emerging pandemic threat program called PREDICT, based on, and I bet you remember this name, Echo Health Alliance's hotspot map. Are we starting to see that one hand washes the other, and a lot of these same names, evil as they may be, just keep reappearing? 2010 saw the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, speaking of an evil name that just keeps reappearing, pledge $10 billion for the decade of vaccines that ended, coincidentally, in 2020. Zhang Li Shi et al. Published a paper entitled Angiotensin Converting Enzyme 2, i.e. ACE2 proteins of different bat species that confer variable susceptibility to the SARS-CoV entry. 2011 saw the ADEPT program and DARPA beginning the investment in what they called nucleic acid vaccines. And Moderna, CureVac, and Inovio all became ADEPT partners. BioNTech paid for a license to use modified mRNA, and Translate Bio was founded, having to do with mRNA portions. 2012 saw the MERS outbreak, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, and it lasted till 2013, with just over 2,500 cases and 822 deaths. It was said to have jumped not only from bats, of course, we always seem to start there, but first to camels before heading up to humans. Six miners working in the Mojiang mine in China contracted a SARS-like disease. Three of them died. Researchers from none other than the Wuhan Institute of Virology went hunting for viruses at the Mojiang mine site on four separate occasions over the next 2 years. The Global Vaccine Action Plan, how exciting, was endorsed by 194 members of the World Health Assembly, led by, of course, who else? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, UNICEF, WHO, and the infamous NIH. And then we have this quote, also from the year 2012. Unlike many gene therapies, which could potentially be curative, in Moderna's case, the patient will need to be dosed, and think of the profit potential here, folks, dosed with the mRNA over and over again. And the quote actually says this, think recurring revenue stream, unquote. 2013 saw another Ebola outbreak from December to January of 2016. We saw 28,600 plus cases and over 11,000 deaths. And guess what? That virus too, the Ebola, was said to have come from bats. What a productive source of really good raw material. Xi and Daszak published a study that year on bat-derived viruses that can infect humans. Theirs was called Isolation and Characterization of a Bat SARS-like Coronavirus that uses, we've heard this, haven't we, the ACE2 receptor. They called it W1V1. And those viruses were later included in a patent filed by Barrick for chimeric coronavirus spike proteins. Moderna got another $25 million plus from DARPA and partnered with AstraZeneca, which made a huge, almost $500 million upfront payment and took an 8% share of the company. CureVac began a phase one trial for an mRNA-based rabies vaccine. In 2014, Team Wang developed their MERS prefusion design. In the month of June that year, Peter Daszak of Echo Health Alliance received the first round of funding for, quote, understanding the risk of bat coronavirus emergence, with over $109 million awarded so far. And that research involved the use of infectious clone technology to assess the impact of spike, claiming, quote, most emerging human viruses come from wildlife. Oh, really? And those represent a significant threat to public health and biosecurity. In October, there was something called a get this, U.S. government gain-of-function deliberative process and research funding pause on selected gain-of-function research involving influenza, MERS, and SARS viruses. But guess what? The work already funded continued regardless. And as we now know, that's not all. In 2015, researchers, including the bat lady herself, Zheng Li Shi, published Bat Origin of Human Coronaviruses, and Barrick, together with researchers from WIV and Chapel Hill, published A SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronaviruses shows potential for human emergence. Oh, by all means, we need to throw some more money at that. And Barrick and the aforementioned Shi published a study comparing the MERS cleavage site to the HKU4 bat virus cleavage site in order to find out which mutations would allow it to infect, say it with me folks, human cells. Are we starting to see a pattern here yet? And at least one question ought to come to mind. Who stands to gain by investing so much money in something that looks a lot more like a bioweapon than anything intended to cure anything? And if somebody did put a whole lot of money into this, intending it to be a cure for something, wouldn't you be disappointed if the need for the cure didn't somehow emerge from the Wuhan lab, or at least somewhere? We're talking trillions with a T of dollars here, folks. And we've already seen that these people are more than willing to lie for just about any reason, at just about the drop of a hat. They're certainly willing to kill as well. Do you think a few trillion dollars is incentive to do maybe even more? And that's presuming they don't have genocidal ambitions to boot. The next 4 years or so on the timeline show a lot of stuff that we're already more familiar with. More bats and coronavirus papers, more patents, more clinical trials, and of course, more contracts and agreements with all of the major players. And let's not forget ID 2020 either. Gonna need something to track the vaccine passports. MasterCard signed on to that one in 2018. The same year that the NIH issued a grant to develop MERS-CoV mRNA vaccines that are, quote, suitable for industrial scale production. Hey, how fortuitous is that? 2018 also turns out to have been the year that the pre-fusion design for the virus, eventually used in several coronavirus vaccines, was made available for licensing. The paper was entitled Collaborative Research and Licensing Opportunity, Pre-Fusion Coronavirus Spike Proteins and Their Use. In 2019, there were more patents, coalitions, trials, and awards, but the interesting story may have been the U.S. government's own Crimson Contagion pandemic plan, or I'm sorry, exercise, based on the idea that infection from, get this, a respiratory virus from China, where else, because they've been funding it, don't you know, develops into a global pandemic, and the results were reported in October, which coincided with Bill Gates on the World Economic Forum's Event 201, laying out, evidently, exactly what they intended to happen. Now you know the rest. And let's not forget those three guys from the Wuhan lab that showed up at a local hospital with a mysterious respiratory disease before the official release. As for 2020 and beyond, you probably remember, even though you're still being lied to, about a whole lot of the details. Let's see if we can't summarize a whole lot of this and why this big lie, in all of its component parts, is not only bigger, but pervasive to an extent that most of us probably still can't quite grasp. And the corollary with that has to do with the people that planned this and are executing it. Or if you prefer, you could say the prince of this world, i.e. the entities that they so clearly serve, which takes us to the bottom line. Just how evil all of this truly is. And I mean how truly evil these people are. If they're willing to lie this completely, this vociferously, and for this long, do you think for a minute that they don't have a deeper plan, that they would hesitate at killing what they've already said they've desired to do for so long? Look at the Georgia Guidestones. Maybe 6 or so billion people. Deagle has already indicated that the United States population should be below 100 million by the year 2025. How the blankety-blank and you-know-what do you think they intended to get there? Well, folks, it ought to be increasingly obvious. So I'll leave you with that and say thank you. Get ready. Prepare yourselves. Come out of her and understand what's coming. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.